Well, welcome everybody to episode 17 of the HRO Adventures podcast from the Kittitas Valley Event Center in Ellensburg. Good afternoon.
It's kind of nice to meet in the middle, isn't
it,
Dave?
Yeah, how are we doing, Rusty?
We're doing pretty good. It had a little bit of rain this morning, so harvest has kind of slowed down for the day. So
can't harvest wet stuff.
Nobody could complain when I left the ranch because they weren't working either. So yeah, it was kind of nice. It was a nice drive here.
Yeah.
Pretty uneventful. How about you?
It was a busy week of taking people to Nantucket and Martha's Vineyard and back and forth, and spent most of the week on the East Coast in the humidity, and I don't need it. I'm glad I'm back.
It was good to be home.
There's only so many times in a day I can fly into those places, and it was the shuttle. Everybody was going to their cottage, as they call it. And then another one was Pelston, Michigan. A lot of rich people go north up in the UP to go to their cottages, and it's kind of in the neighborhood of like International Falls and all the bird hunting and stuff that goes on in the fall when it's cold and they're in those blinds that lay in the snow. But during the summer, it's looks like the little city that was in the movie The Footloose where that was on the lake. It's exactly like that, and people go to their cottages. So a lot of running everybody and all their gear and their armoires and everything to their cottages. So
very cool.
Glad to be back and pull up the drawbridge and not deal with that anymore. So anyway, well, you've got some special guests.
I do. We've been talking about it for quite a few podcasts. We've named both of these guests and other stories that we've told. But it's nice to be able to get them on the podcast today. First, I want to introduce Mark Eiler. He's been guiding for me for, I want to say we probably started in 06 or 07.
Yeah, probably. I think 06.
06?
Yeah.
Yeah, and so that was, it's been a few days, since then.
Yeah.
The only thing that the other guest has on you is he's been hunting with me longer than you have.
Right.
And so the other guest is Mike Odello. He's been hunting with me since 02, I believe. 01 or 02?
Not about 01, I think.
01? 01. So Mike knows the place pretty well, too, so it's going to be kind of fun. Mike hunted with us for years and years, but probably in the last, I want to say 7 or 8, you've actually come up and I even let you take a hunter one time.
Yeah.
We'll never let the two of you go together ever again.
But I think I've been more than one hunter.
So, but Mike comes up and works during hunting camp, helps us around the hunting stuff too. So, and Mike, actually he lost his hunting partner into Idaho several years ago.
Oh.
And, I invited myself, but he accepted so I could go elk hunting with him over in Idaho. We did that for 6 or 7 years there straight.
Oh, nice.
That was kind of
whereabouts
fun.
Whereabouts in Idaho?
So I'm Salmon.
Okay, yeah.
Yeah, it's really, I like it there.
That's a cool
really
place.
Fun place to hunt.
You've been hunting there early
since
90s?
89.
89,
oh, wow.
Yeah.
This is the first year I don't have a tag because
they did
change their ways. No. Yeah. So,
wow, what a cool place.
So, yeah, that was kind of fun. So, how we do this, guys, is I just tell you how I know you, but I'm going to let you introduce yourself. So, I don't spill the beans, tell something I shouldn't tell. I don't know what I would know that I shouldn't tell, but I'm just going to let you go. So Mark, tell us who you are.
Yeah, Mark Eiler from Ellensburg, Washington. I've known Rusty for, 20 years. Got started with him. He actually was leasing my father-in-law's ranch up in Loomis, Washington, and that's how we got kind of started. And my father-in-law just had one rule to accept the lease, and that was that his son-in-law, me, would be the guide. So that's how I got started.
Cool.
We did that for a few years up on the ranch, and that was great. It's a great whitetail property. Then I kind of moved on to Rusty's other property up in Central Washington, and been chasing mule deer since then mostly. And then I work here in Kittitas County. I work for the noxious weed department, so kind of an invasive plant guy, and then do stuff for emergency management.
Get your hands full around here with evasive species.
Yeah, for sure. Yep, so that's what I do on an everyday basis.
Wow.
But I always carve a lot of time off in the fall to do some of my passions, which would be chasing animals.
Nice.
So, yeah.
And Mark's, your brother hunts, your dad and your uncle hunt.
Yeah, I grew up grew up hunting. It's kind of been, yeah, my grandpa started, you know, that's kind of where I got started with my grandpa and my dad. And yeah, so lifelong hunter and mostly public land hunter to begin with. Been obviously guiding on private land for the last 20 years, but I still hunt on my own a lot, and we do mostly public land.
You've guided on public also?
We've guided some. I also do some hunts for Outdoors for Our Heroes, Washington chapter. Yeah. And so I do some elk hunts for Outdoors for Our Heroes, mostly just the terminally ill program.
Gotcha.
So
okay.
We'll take out terminally ill veterans that have basically a governor's tag. Mm-hmm. And they're designated certain units, but basically it's kind of a governor's tag.
Yeah.
And I do that mostly around here in Kittitas County. And okay. That's been a great honor too.
Yeah,
it's awesome.
Really cool.
It's a privilege to do.
Thanks
for sure.
Yeah, that's pretty cool. Some of those pictures, and we might actually touch into some of that before we're done today. We'll
yeah.
see how it goes. And I know, you know, your wife, she's the love of your life. I know, but didn't hurt to marry Dean's
right.
Daughter there.
Yep.
With
sure.
all the whitetail hunting that he had on his ranch.
Yeah, that's pretty amazing piece of property. And a lot of whitetails for sure. So yeah, that was a pretty cool piece of property. It's not in the family anymore. It has since been sold, but very neat piece of property.
Yeah, and to the point that sometimes just driving to the house where Dean and Sue, his mother-in-law, lived, the bighorns would come down off of Chepaca there.
Yeah, really.
And so that was always a distraction during
yes,
deer season
sure.
to look at.
Yeah,
you have to stop and look at the bighorns. So,
yeah.
So yeah, we had a lot of fun with that too. Taking a look at that. Mark, when I leased that property, when I leased the property next door 2 years earlier, Dean and I had known each other for years before that through the cattlemen's and doing different things with cows and hauling cows around, different things. And so I had known Dean for years.
Okay.
And so when I showed up, you know, Dean was, well, what are you doing up here?
What are you doing here?
And so, you know, it was a nice handshake and we're friends and cattlemen and everything. And then all of a sudden I said, yeah, I leased the ranch here next to you for hunting. And he goes, you're an outfitter? And then all of a sudden I was public enemy number one. Turned pretty fast. And so Dean had to tell me his opinion on outfitters. And, but it didn't hurt our friendship. It did hurt the business relationship part for a year or two there. And then Dean watched me for 2 years is what it ended up being.
Can't blame
and,
that at all.
Came out to one day, he just said, he goes, you know, we ought to talk about this hunting thing. And he wanted to do was a typical landowner. He just wanted to have control over what was going to happen. And part of that control was I have to take his son-in-law as a guide. And I'm like going, I'm really picky on who I want as my guides. I don't know your son-in-law. Who is this guy? And then come to find out later, Mark finally fessed up after about 10 years that he had the same thing. I don't want to work for an outfitter. Who is this guy? So yeah, but it's been fun ever since we started.
Yeah.
And as we were getting ready for the podcast, it kind of came up that the first group of hunters that came in when Mark was guiding for me was the group that Mike hunts with him and his two buddies. So yeah, it's kind of funny that Mike's on the podcast with us today too. So Mike, tell us who you are.
So my name is Mike Odello. I'm from Carmel. Met Rusty probably in, I don't know, 1992, 93
in
Reno. Met him there three times a year. And all we talked about was hunting. We'd stand in the back and talk about hunting the whole time. And then eventually Rusty started talking about, hey, I want to have a hunting place up here at my ranch and stuff. And I'm like, well, I'll be your first customer, you know. But no, I'm from Carmel, California. We were artichoke farmers. I did that for 30 plus years.
Just there, like 4 days ago, for the big F1 out of Monterey. And stuff.
Oh, you were? Yeah. Oh, nice. Well, that's an airport that you probably go to quite a bit. But so I did that, and then I worked in construction for another 20 years. Now I'm retired and working.
Busier than ever.
Yeah. Well, actually, I'm working with Rusty's brothers, helping them with the harvest. So that's my vacation time.
There you go.
So that's what I'm doing right now.
Yeah, that's pretty cool. Yeah, Mike was one of the first ones when we started Hidden Ranch Outfitters to take a chance and go, and mainly because of the relationship we had had at the shows down in when we would meet in Reno those three times a year, and Mike and I'd hang around and go around, and we'd buy stuff and sell stuff and talk hunting, and it was kind of a crazy time. So Very cool. So it's kind of fun that you guys are here together, and you guys have hunted a lot since 06.
We've been in a lot of camps together. A lot of camps.
Yeah. Yes, you have.
Some good stories to tell and some we don't want to talk about.
Exactly. I'll try to bring those up.
Yeah, don't incriminate anybody. Yeah.
Yeah, absolutely. Well, Mark is, like you said, his father-in-law's ranch is no longer in the family, and so we don't hunt up there anymore. And Mark has made the transition to only hunting down on the ranch there in Douglas County, in Central Washington. And so that's been quite a change, even though it didn't take me long to find out that Mark had actually hunted on some of the ranch prior to coming down and hunting for me.
Seemed to know right where to go.
As I'm taking him over to show him this really cool spot, and he goes, you know, if you come up through this trail, right? I'm like, what?
I can see that too, yeah.
Yep. Yeah, we spent a lot of time when I was younger hunting along the Columbia River, and so we accessed a lot of ground through there. Public ground.
Yeah.
Public ground only.
Yeah. So that's been a lot of fun.
Yeah.
We've had some really good stories. Mark, that first year, Mark came over. We were still hunting up on his father-in-law's ranch, and it was Mike's group. And I kept telling Mark, I said, you know, come over for dinner. It'd be really good to sit down. You always get to know your hunters a little bit better if you're sitting around the table and everything. And so I want the guides to be there if they can. And so Mark, he would relent because he's staying over at his father-in-law's place, which was only a mile and a half away. But Mark could come over and have dinner with us. Well, one time I talked him into bringing Dean over. Well, we found out that Mark and I don't have to do any talking if we bring Dean over, because Dean would just sit and tell stories all day at the dinner table.
Yeah, so he was a man that wouldn't talk much if it's not a subject that he didn't want to talk about.
Gotcha.
But you got him going on something he really wanted to talk about. He could. He had a lot of stories. He lived his life quite large, and he had a lot of stories to tell, and they were always very entertaining. So he could tell a good. He could tell a good story.
That's good.
Yeah. I always wanted to know the real story, you know, because he would start telling these
stories. And none of them I was there, so I don't know.
And he would only tell us once that you and me weren't there. So, but he would, you know, he'd talk about chasing down cougars.
Oh, yeah.
Cougars.
He was a cougar hunting fool.
He was.
Yeah. He took care of, well, he guided cougar hunts for like 30 years.
Oh, boy.
And then from all over the U.S. And then he also took care of problem cougars for the state for a little while, too. So he had always had really good dogs, and
so he had dogs and the whole deal.
Him and I could, I felt like him and I could talk deer hunting strategies, and I could sit at the table with him and talk there, but
there
when it came to cats, I couldn't even talk to him about it, because he was super knowledgeable about cats.
They are a unique critter to go chase too, right?
And I remember
different
that.
Chasing something that can get you too.
Well, and he was, if you believe the stories, which I did, but he'd spend the night out there after a cat. He wouldn't give up and go home. He'd stay.
Well, there was a cat that was at the ranch that had gotten hit. Big haystack, a lot of times you leave a hole in the middle so it doesn't get all hot, and a cat had gotten into that haystack. It was in the bottom in that hole because they washed it, they kind of chased it off the ranch and went in there. And Dean actually just hopped down in there with a handgun and shot it like me to you. Like,
wow. Like a tunnel rat.
Yeah, exactly. So he had no fear of the things. He kind of figured that he thought like him, so he knew what they were going to do. And so that was a Dean, though. He was like that. He could do just about anything. He was kind of a self-made man, like the essence of a true cowboy.
Absolutely. Cool. You want to talk about a true cowboy? Yeah. I'd put Dean in that category.
Yeah. He was the essence of a true cowboy. Yeah,
he was. Yeah. He was. Yeah. And Dean could tell some stories. And if there was times when you didn't really have time for the story, but you took time.
But you made
because
time.
You just had you had to let him finish.
Yeah.
And so he would get to go. Dean, one of the stories, probably last year or two that we hunted the ranch, I took a hunter from the lower ranch and I drove all the way up there. Dean goes, yeah, we got this one buck. We need to, it'd be a good one for one of your clients. And so I took, I can't remember, Michael, I think was his name.
Yeah.
Took him up there.
Yeah, it was Michael.
And Mike and I get up there and, Michael's already in sensory overload because just driving in, there's 15, 20 mule deers standing around that are getting off the road as you're driving in. And then there's whitetails all over the field, you know.
Wow.
And this is still, we're 2-3 hours before daylight, you know, before dark that night. And so I went up to the door and so this Dean's coming out. I said, now Dean, I says, I didn't tell this guy anything about this buck or anything. I says, he's already in overload. Because there's, it's all deer everywhere, and I said, so just you know, tell me, but don't tell him, kind of thing, where to look and whatever. We get down there, Dean gets pretty excited. He starts talking to the guys. He's driving us down to where he wants us to sit, and Dean has this place set up for us. Right, well, it's actually in the pivot of the circle.
Yep.
And he has it all ready, and you guys are gonna sit right here and everything else, and then. He doesn't tell me. He tells the hunter.
Oh.
Okay. I've been watching this buck for 2 weeks. Every day he does this. And he comes right out over there, and he's going to walk right out into the middle of the field. And I'm like going, oh, this is going to be bad. This is going to be so bad. Sure enough, that hunter moved his chair right over and then the blind there, and he's got his gun just pointed right at that spot. And
he didn't look at anything else but that spot.
And he stared at that spot, and I'm going, you know, he's not even enjoying it. We've got bucks running around, and of course, you know, I'm looking at everything, looking all over, and the guy starts getting nervous. We're about 20 minutes till dark, and he goes, yeah. He says, I don't think it's coming out tonight. I don't think it's coming out. You know, Dean said, I'm going, I know what Dean said. He says, we're going to sit till dark. So it's only 20 more minutes. Oh, I don't think he's coming out. I can't believe my luck. You know, we come up here and everything else. And he no more than just about ready to give up. And that buck comes walking out through out of that thicket. Mm-hmm. And he walks right out in the field. And he wanted to shoot him. And I'm going, whoa. That's like 400 yards, dude. Let's let him get it closer across the field. Well, we only got 10 minutes. And so as the buck got closer, and finally I said, go ahead and shoot it. And so he shoots it. Well, I know, just like you know, Mark, Dean's watching from the deck of his house, right? Yeah. And Dean sees us down there, and he sees us shoot, and he sees the deer go down. And we go out there, we go walking out in the field, and here's this deer laying there, and I get over there, and it's just something's not right. Something's not right, and I look at him, and the hunter just puts his gun down and runs right over, and he grabs those horns, and as he picks up the horns of that buck, I'm just looking, I'm going, that deer is stiff as a board. I said, Mike, I think you better put the head down. And he goes, why? And he goes, take my picture. So I thought, well, I'm going to take his picture. It's going to be a scary one. And I took a picture, and he sets the head down, and that buck blinked. He was alive as live could be. He had spined him right in the back, just behind the head and the neck. So he was full out paralyzed, but he was as live. He wasn't going to die. And so when I finally get, you know, Michael just jumps back and scared to death. And then I thought, okay, I said, well, you got to shoot him again. Oh, we got to mount this buck. I can't shoot him again, Rusty. Well, what do you want me to do? I can't cut his throat if we're going to take a cape off. And I said, just shoot him again. He goes, oh, I can't shoot him again. And so Dean comes driving up, and I'm out there killing this buck with my knife.
Oh, no.
Trying to stab it and kill this buck. And Dean's like, what are you doing? I remember him just making fun of me. And I'm going, I don't know what else to do. And he goes, well, get with it. So I love Dean. He was a good one. He was a good one. But boy, he could track. He could read the hoof prints.
Yeah.
You know, 300 deer down there, and he could tell you which one was the one that buck that walked across the field.
Okay.
So he was pretty good. Pretty good. So, Mark, tell me about, you hadn't done much guiding up till that point at all, had you?
No, just a lot of my own hunting. Yeah. I mean, you know, guiding other family members, but that's not really guiding. That's so. But
It's one thing about arguing with your brother over what's going on.
Right. Yeah, exactly.
Doing the
call. So a lot of hunting, but not any guiding. That was my first stint at guiding.
Yeah. But you seem to like it.
Yeah. No, I really like it. I mean, I'm one of those guys that it's more about like the events that lead up to the harvest that I really care about. So like, I don't necessarily have to have the harvest. Like I spend like, even now, like, I, you know, I got two boys of my own that are hunters, and I got a lot of buddies that are hunters, and I have just as good a time going out there with them and getting them a buck or getting them an elk as you know, I don't necessarily have to pull the trigger.
Yeah.
So actually, like the last few years, I haven't hunted like me personally on my own, like me going after something specifically for quite a while. I'm waiting to get drawn on something so I can, but
there you go.
But good luck with that in this state. So,
you'll get drawn and be too old to go.
Yeah, at the same time, I have been pretty fortunate. I have, you know, I've been drawn for branch bull three times, and I got three nice bulls in my house. So yeah, so I have been fortunate up to about 12 years ago when the system really started to kind of go downhill. But,
did pretty good though.
Yeah.
But yeah, those three bulls though, they were all here at Kittitas County, weren't they?
Every one of them was in Kittitas County. Yep.
And you rifle, archery, both? What do you like?
I guide all weapons, but me personally, I muzzleload a lot. But for elk, it's always been rifle. Okay. So I would probably switch to muzzleloader if it was just me. But I hunt with my dad and my uncle quite a bit, and until they call it quits, so I probably be staying with rifle because that's what they hunt with. So.
Okay. So for the gear people that like to kind of dig into that, what rounds and what rifles do you like?
So I shoot a 6.5 PRC now, but I shot a 270 forever.
That's always been my favorite.
All three of those bulls were shot with my 270. Mm-hmm. In fact, I haven't killed a large animal with my 6.5 PRC yet, so I need to fix that.
Okay.
Yeah, so it has not been battle tested yet. The 270 was well battle tested. It had a lot of animals under its belt, but the 6.5 PRC has not yet. So, yeah, and I went with the 6.5 PRC just because I wanted something, you know, a little bit longer range, and you know, I didn't buy into the Creedmoor because it was just a kind of flashy 7mm weight, in my opinion. So I wanted something with a little more power, so that's why I went with PRC. Yeah,
but
I
do like power when it gets there, right?
Yeah. I do like the concept of better sectional density off a longer bullet, like the new ballistics have. Mm-hmm. 270 doesn't really have that. So that's why
it wasn't thought of back then.
No. So that's why I almost went with the 7mm PRC, but I thought the 6.5 was a little more better fit for me.
Yeah,
so,
cool. All right.
Yeah. So.
Haven't killed a big animal with it yet.
No, I have not.
I hadn't thought
shot
about
a few
that.
Little things, coyotes, but nothing that I was actually set out. So
interesting. Yeah, Mark was always fun to have in camp when he was still shooting his 270 because we'd have all these guys show up with their 300s and their 7mm.
They're telling him,
you got to have one of these. And Mark's going, you can get by with a 270. Oh, I can't shoot.
As long as you shoot properly, right?
Right, yeah. Exactly.
That was Mark's deal. He goes, because to learn how to shoot, you can get by with a 270. And, it was always a good conversation.
They were good rounds, but you couldn't fix bad habits.
Right. No. Right.
Some of this new stuff kind of fix a bad habit, won't it? So be careful.
And the thing about hunting, like shooting and hunting are totally different.
Yeah.
Like we've guided guys that on a bench could drill tacks at 500-600 yards and could ring the dongs at 1,000 yards. But you get them excited out in the field.
Yeah.
And they'll miss a 300 yard shot.
Yep.
And that happens a lot.
Oh yeah.
Like so bench shooting and shooting in the field with emotions and all the environmental conditions that happen and not a perfect rest is 100% different.
30 minutes to let the barrel cool down.
Yeah.
And,
uncle exactly. is a terrible bench shooter.
Okay.
Like he can, if he hits paper, he's happy. That's all he cares about.
He's very instinctual.
Very instinctual and he has killed a lot of animals.
You should have Mark tell you about the bow deer I shot last year at 20 yards. He could stand next to me, he could hear my heart beating.
Yeah, we were last year during archery season. We got in on this buck. It was bedded behind a little chimney rock, and we made this nice. It was middle of the day too. We had our first morning hunt was blown, and it was about 10 o'clock. And typically, what we do during archery season about 10 before we go back, you know, I kind of just go to my glassing points and start glassing for bedded bucks. And sure enough, we spotted this one in the shade of a rock, and I'm like, oh, perfect. I think we can use the rock as a blocker and just come right in. And it was noisy as heck because it was super dry, and it was in a field with a lot of mustard and they're crackly, and it wasn't. But we were able to move right in, and we got to the, about that 40-yard mark, and he's still bedded, and he's, you could tell by the way his ears were moving, like he knew we were there, but
he knew was, something was up.
Yeah, but he was set with just staying there. And he was in a spot too where we didn't have to move. Like the sun wasn't going to be on him for like at least 3 hours. So he was not going to move.
Yeah,
so
funny how they know where those spots are.
So we're sitting there. Sun is like, we have no cover at all. Like none. This area burned a few years ago and there's no cover at all. And so we're sitting in the full sun at 40 yards and just baking. And I can hear Mike's heart. And I'm, we were just sitting there and I'm like thinking about it. I'm like, man, I don't know if we're going to be able, if Mike's going to be able to sit here for that long. And then pretty soon, like we waited like 20 minutes and then I'm still thinking, looking at the clock, and we wait another 20 minutes. And by that time we're both very, very hot and we had moved in. We're at 20 yards now.
Okay. Wow.
So we're at 20 yards, and the buck now has started to fall back asleep. Like, his head's going back down. You see him nodding off. And I'm looking at the sun, looking at the shade. I'm like, he's not going to move. And I'm going, I don't know if we can tolerate the environmental conditions that we're in. Like, I think we're going to get tired. So I'm like, so I got a little antsy. Rusty can vouch for this. I'm more of an aggressive hunter most of the time. So I'm like, okay, Mike, I'm going to start walking off to the west. That buck won't be able to see me until I get about 75 to 100 yards away. It'll probably stand up and look at me. I was like, you stay here. When it stands up, you should have shot.
And you're getting them turned and everything.
Yep, you know? Exactly. So luckily it worked. I mean, it doesn't always work. But
you're a genius.
But it worked exactly like I had planned. And sure enough, I get out to 100 yards. That buck stands up, looks right at me. And Mike had to make, it was a little more quartered than what we thought it was going to be. But Mike made a good shot. And it ran about 500 yards. So we got on it again, got another arrow in it. But we got that buck. So it was a cool hunt. But
yeah, sounds like it.
But it was hot, and yeah, sometimes in archery season especially, those midday stalks can be pretty brutal. Ideally you get a spot where that buck maybe has to move in an hour when the shade disappears and he has to adjust, and that's a great time to, you know, if you're in position to be able to get a shot off. But that buck was in a spot where he wasn't moving for a long time because he had a big, it was a big rock, you know, it was like a 30-foot rock. So. Okay.
But it was hot. It was hot. Cause I was sweating. I had sweat coming down my face. I was like, am I going to be able even to hold on to my bow?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Well, when you guys came in, it was noon, you know, just after lunch, and we're skinning. And Mark's going, I don't think we're going to keep it cool. It's not going to cool down. It's going to get hotter.
Yeah.
And so we ran a lot of water on that thing.
Yeah, cooled down pretty good. And actually, I mean, it skinned up pretty nice.
It did. Yeah. It did. So, yeah.
What kind of bow and what kind of arrows were you using in broadheads and all that stuff?
That was a Bowtech.
Bowtech, okay.
And then my arrows were just, what are they, Slick Tricks?
Okay.
Yeah, 100 grain.
100?
I'm not into the mechanical ones because I've actually been at Rusty's and hunted with a guy that used the mechanical and it went right through the deer. It never opened or
points
anything.
Points of failure on those, right? Too many to be comfortable.
We had one that went all the way through, what didn't open.
Never deployed.
And then we've had them deploy before we shoot, which is more likely that we've had more trouble with. All of a sudden, you know, the guy goes about to pull back and it's already deployed and it's going like, well, that ain't going to fly.
It's not going to fly very well.
No. And so we can't,
You just don't need to have more
things. One more thing to go wrong, right?
Yeah. Especially with archery, because there's already a number of things that can mess up your hunt.
I've never been a fan of them. They're interesting, but just too many ways that can go wrong versus standby, right? You know, it's going to work. You've flown it. You've tested it, so to speak.
Well, even simplifying it more, I'm kind of intrigued with those single plane broadheads that are getting, they're gaining a little steam right now, saying they, you know, fly a little truer. They're heavier weight because they're single plane. And they're gaining some steam. I want to guide somebody that
those
has them.
Those are the old Fred Bears. That's what we had when I was a kid.
So
that's
like there's a company
had.
Called Iron Will that's very proper. They're probably the most popular single plane broadheads right now. And I'm kind of intrigued by them. I almost want to bring some to camp and convince somebody to use them.
Yeah, they fly nice and they do a good job.
Well,
that's what we have.
Somebody else is going to shoot a deer besides me.
That's what you always say, Mike, and you always get the one.
Yeah, they're starting to think I'm setting them up.
Well, guys, we're coming up on a time for a quick break. If we let's step out for a quick commercial, and then when we return, we'll dive more into HRO adventures and some of the hunting.
All right. Sounds good.
The Snoqualmie Inn by Hotel America is the perfect location to stay at when visiting the Snoqualmie Valley. With 99 guest rooms, the inn can accommodate travel, sports teams, and seminars in addition to valley visitors. Enjoy the breakfast buffet, fitness center, and indoor pool before starting your activities. Coaches and parents alike will enjoy the spacious meeting rooms and lounging areas with food and coffee retailers, all within steps of the front door. Use promo code SNOWPOD for 12% off. Teams contact Lori Hay for reservations and discounts. Make the Snoqualmie Inn part of your stay. And don't forget to use the promo code SNOWPOD, that's S-N-O-P-O-D, in all caps.
Mike was our first archery hunter. And so Mike, we were down at the Reno show, and I'm telling Mike, I says, you know, I'm hunting with, at that time, John was still guiding for me, and John and I would go out archery hunting because I wanted to be able to prove whether I could archery hunt or not.
Okay.
Because I'd go to the shows and everybody was giving me a bad time. You can't archery hunt there. You can't archery hunt there. And I'm going, but we've been archery hunting. We haven't killed anything yet because I'm a terrible archery hunter. But, you know, I told John, I said, we got to learn this thing. So John and I would go out. He'd come up and I said, we got to learn how to guide. I need to know, am I in front? Am I in back? Am I off to the side? What do I do? How do I guide an archery hunter?
Because it's unique, isn't it? Yeah.
Yeah. So for a couple of years there, it was just John and I. And we'd go out and we were actually trying to kill a deer. But I was trying to learn how to guide, and we could never get a good shot on one. And we finally got to where John was missing. And so by that time I was shooting, and I'd got my bow and I was starting to learn how to shoot and everything. And so I'd missed a couple times. Well, in the middle of all this, I told Mike, I said, Mike, you need to, you know, your buddies aren't coming this time, because Mike would come every year.
Okay.
But his buddies would only come every so often. And I said, it was just Mike that year. I said, hey, Mike, you need to move up to archery. And he goes, okay, fine. I'll come up to archery. So
and no pressure, archery before that, huh?
You had hunted little? Archery
before I hunted that. Archery did, in okay. California, but okay. California archery season's in August, and it's like 103.
Yeah, I was going to say.
And okay. You're full camo, and you know, you can't sit in a tree.
Yeah.
Because the deer... there's so much acreage, they could be, you'd see them there, but
they wouldn't come by the tree.
Closing
they wouldn't
the come, gap is yeah, a whole close, different yeah. deal, yeah.
It's pretty buggy, too.
Yeah.
Oh, yeah.
Well, you had the bees, the biting flies. The whole nine yards, poison oak.
So, and I think you'd hunted some down in southeast Idaho, too, didn't you?
Carl and I went to Pocatello.
And so I knew he hunted with it, so I talk him into it, and he comes up. So Mike and I go opening day, and we're sitting in the pickup, and, you know.
With our aluminum arrows,
and, you know.
They were good till you bent one.
Yeah.
and, you know, I know where this really nice buck is, and at that point, you know, I was still into the whole rifle mode. You know, let's go hunt the biggest buck, even if he's in a bachelor group of 16 bucks. And so me and Mike are sitting there and we're watching this bachelor group of bucks trying to figure out how we're going to get close to this one buck, you know, which out of the 16, there was probably 10, 12 of them that were legal.
Wow.
Which we figured out later. When archery hunting, legal is good. You don't need 16 bucks and you don't need a, you know, 150 plus buck. But anyway, so as we're watching these things are out in the middle of a stinking stubble field. There's no way we're going to get on them. It's too dry. It's too loud. And I happened to turn around and there'd been some other deer, you know, the other way. And so I turned around and looked and here's this one nice looking buck coming in and he's coming into water. So I know where he's going. And so I says, okay, we're going to go. And I left my brother-in-law sitting in the pickup. And I said, you watch him because we're going to go down in that hole. And if we shoot him and he comes out of that hole, I need to know where he goes.
Start honking the horn.
Yeah, well, to watch which direction. Because by the time, if we don't kill him, he'll run out with an arrow or wound or whatever. Exactly. And then I don't know which direction to go. So anyway, Mike and I go down there and we sneak in there. And we're in there for like an hour. Nothing shows up. So we sneak back out, and we get about halfway across the field. My brother-in-law is going, go back, go back. He's coming in. He's coming in. So Mike and I go back, and we don't know where the buck is. We don't know what's going on, but we follow, and we go back. We get all set up, and we're right on the shore of the lake. And this I could go through a list of the things we did wrong, like 100.
400 things.
Yeah, and so that I would never do today because I kind of have a little bit better idea what I'm doing. But Mike and I just, we get in there, and then we're way too aggressive. We're moving around. We don't know where to go. We don't know where the deer is. We don't know which way he's coming in. And we're right on a lake, so we've stuck ourselves with nowhere to go to our left. And as we get there, this doe comes walking in, and so Mike and I just sit down, and we're on the side of a really steep bank on the side of the hill, go right down. We're 10 feet from the water, and we're just stuck against this hill, and this doe comes all the way in, and she drinks out of the lake, and then she starts screwing around, and she's getting closer to us, and I think we could have shot her at the lake at like 40 yards.
Yeah.
She feeds and she's just coming up and she's going to come up to Mike and I. And we're just sitting there with nothing taller than your knees to sit in, right? And all of a sudden, here comes the buck. So now we're really stuck. This doe is coming over to us. The buck's coming in and the buck gets in there and he gets just about to where we can see all of the buck. And he's quite a ways away. He's probably 60 yards, I'm guessing. I'm guessing that's part of the story.
That's part of the story.
And, you know, I'm trying not to move because we have no cover.
Yeah, and our legs are bent underneath us.
And we're sitting on our legs, and our legs have been asleep now for an hour. And that's, you know, so can we even move when we need to? And this doe comes right up to us, and the doe finally is like, I don't know, she must be 6-8 feet from me.
Yeah.
I felt like I could touch her. She was just out of hand between me and the lake. And I told Mike, I says, she's going to smell us because there is no wind now because she's right next to me. And so she's going to smell us. She's going to, I don't know what she's going to do. And when she smells us, her head flips around. And of course I'm like leaning because I don't know what she's going to do. And she just freaks out, and she jumps like 20 feet out into the lake. Wow. Big splash. And the buck just looks at her like, what are you doing?
Yeah.
And she's splashing around out there, and she is snorting, and she's hammering her feet on the ground. Mike and I are like, okay, this is blown. And the buck's is just looking at her like, you're one crazy lady. And he just watches her, and she swims across the lake. And she comes out on the other side, and she's on the other side of the lake now, and she's stomping, and she's blowing at us, and she's got us nails. She knows exactly who we are, and this buck's right there, so she's just freaking out. And so you think you could hear his heart beating. I could hear his heart and my heart beating because it was really crazy. And the buck goes down and gets all the way to the water, and she just blows up. And so she just runs at him. Well, he just runs into this.
In the tules.
Into this little patch of tules, and we can't see him. But he's still right there. Hour, hour and a half. He stayed inside this patch of tules. We couldn't see him. But we couldn't get out. And we could shoot. By this time, I know where he's at, so I'm at range finding everything. And then he stuck his head out one time at about half an hour. And he looked around. And then he just back up. And then
we're there for another hour.
And then he finally comes out. It's getting hot. And he finally comes out. And we still haven't moved. My legs were completely numb.
Yeah.
And he comes out and he gets over to the lake. And so I range find him. And Mike and I had bought these brand new Leica rangefinders at that time. They were crossways instead of up and down. The old ones. And
state of the art back then.
They were futuristic. We had spent all this money on these. Yep. We'd both bought them at Reno at the show, and we were so excited about them. You know, luckily, we bought them from the same guy. So I ranged it. I told him, I says, Mike, it's 51 yards or 52 yards. I can't
52.
Remember. 52 yards. And so Mike's like, he's got that old Martin bow, and we're shooting those aluminum arrows that are, you know, big around as a nickel. Mm-hmm. And Mike pulls back, and he's got a 50-yard pin, and I see this bow, and I'm going, holy cow, this is like the Olympics. We're shooting at the top of some tower. And I'm looking at that going,
not to mention my arrow was bouncing on the
He's on the shaking wrist. That the arrow is coming off of his moleskin, and it's ticking. It's going tick, 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 right on the side.
But
and I'm going, yeah.
Back up just a tad, because remember you told me to stand up.
Oh, yeah. So I said, Mike, I think you better stand up. So Mike tries to stand up.
The
legs are toast, man. He can't stand up. He could barely lean on one knee because we'd been there so too long. And the buck puts his head down in the water. And when he did, there was enough grass right there where they'd been going into water that it covered his eyes. And so we could do all this fiddling around. I mean, there was a million things that this deer should have ran off a long time ago. And so Mike gets full draw, and then I see him, and he's just pulling up, and I'm going, what? No way.
He's going for that 50-yard pin.
Yeah.
And he lets that thing go, and that arrow just, pew, and I mean, it's shooting an arc, just like a rainbow. And I'm like, what was he shooting at? And the arrow just drops in, and it goes through and through, right through the ribs. Right, and you see the arrow come out the other end, and the buck just explodes. He had his head in the water when the arrow hit him, and he just turns and he explodes, and he goes 30 yards and he falls over dead. And Mike and I are like, did that just happen? Because we've been here for so long. And then Mike's trying to stand up, and he's cheering, and I'm trying to stand up, and neither one of us could stand up. We're rolling around on the hill, and this deer's dead over there. And so that was the first ever archery buck at HRO. Wow. Then Mike was the one. And so to finish the story on the rangefinders, we get back to Mike goes home to California. And it's like a week later, Mike goes, Rusty, you want to know how lucky we were? And I says, how's that? He goes, my rangefinder is on meters. So I've been practicing all summer with this new rangefinder, and I've been shooting at 50 meters.
That's like 10 feet off.
And he says, and you told me 52 yards. Mm-hmm. He says, how we dropped an arrow on this buck at 52 yards and everything. And I says, wait a minute. I go over to my rangefinder, and it's set at meters. We were so lucky that both of them were set at meters.
Because at that range, the difference between 50 is huge. There's a lot of drop. So if you were at yards and he was in meters, he would have had a clean miss.
Yeah. He would have even went higher.
Right.
Yeah. So like he's shooting over the castle.
Oh, my word. But it was so fun. Because we got pictures and we went back. We couldn't wait to get to the Reno show so we could tell all these guys that came around.
52-meter buck.
The other thing with the cap off that story was when I went to the archery shop, because the archery guy saw my Martin bow with the aluminum arrows, and that was just in the transition stage. And he goes, you know, why don't you buy a new bow, you know, instead of going with that thing? And I go, I'm going to go hunting with this thing first and see if I even like bow hunting. Mm-hmm. Then, you know, I drove home and I'm like, okay, here's the Barton bow. I'll get it.
That's funny. I know that bow. I shot that bow. Yeah.
Oh, yeah.
That was I think that's what the Dukes of Hazzard had in their trunk. It was the Barton bow, yeah.
Yeah, I think so.
That's funny. So. It was one of the first ones.
That was so much fun. So
well, cool. Well, to get into just a little bit of guiding stuff, because we're coming up on the time where you're about ready to have the first archery guy show up here pretty soon.
We are.
What are you seeing when you're guiding? Doesn't necessarily have to be archery, but is there anything from your viewpoint that guys could be? I mean, we kind of all know what we should be working on before we come out and go hunt with Rusty, but you know, as far as target shooting and your equipment and all that. But anything you're seeing, maybe physical fitness or something that seems to be a common thing that could be fixed before a guy shows up?
With archery, I think the biggest thing that I see is being able to like hold a position long enough.
Because
like situations where like whether you're in a ground blind or mm-hmm. just behind a bush or something where the buck comes in, you have a shot. Or getting ready, he stops, you draw, but then he's behind a bush or something. Mm-hmm. And you have to hold at full draw mm-hmm. until he steps out.
Yeah.
We had a hunt a couple of years ago with one of Mike's buddies where that exact same thing happened. Like buck was at 25 yards. He puts his head down to feed. He draws. Everything's perfect. But then he takes one step and he's behind a bush and there's no shot. And Grace is at full draw. The buck doesn't know we're there. He still doesn't know we're there, but we have no shot. And we're just waiting for him to take another step forward. Well, we're waiting and waiting, and pretty soon I can see Grace, everything's starting to wobble, wobble, wobble. And then the arrow like goes like 2 feet. Because he was trying to hold it. And then he goes to, the buck gets startled, but stops again at 45. We still have a good shot. And he goes to draw, and he can't, like, his arms are so dead, he can't even draw anymore. So just that, I would, like, not only, like, the ability to hold a draw, but, you know, pulling multiple times, holding it steady, shooting off a knee, off mm-hmm. of one knee, mm-hmm. off two knees.
In the weird positions.
In the weird positions.
In real life, yeah.
Like, all that stuff. Because, like, a lot of people, they can drill that block.
Yeah.
Standing perfectly set on flat ground at 30, 40, 50, 60. Mm-hmm. But you give them a little variation, mm-hmm. and then all of their mechanics, that muscle memory that they mm-hmm. have built up, is out the window. So you got to kind of build a little bit of that muscle memory of those other weird positions a little bit.
Yeah, we've talked about that. So, you know, flat range shooting at the block is, you know, step one.
Yes.
Step two, we really like that dead nuts target because it's also calibrating your eye to the different changes in fur color,
where
your aiming spot is. You know, we talked about knowing some anatomy and stuff like that. Yep. Sometimes where you think the heart shot would be, you're a little bit high, right?
Right.
Or string jump or whatever. So we like the dead nuts targets because of that super realistic photography, right? You see the changes and the creases in the fur, and you can follow your little triangle and your guides. And then another piece of that to add, and you can go out to YouTube and take a look. There are training videos on how to train to max draw, hold it. There's a counter. There's a metronome. And you can add that to your workout, right? And that would be a great piece to add. And then, you know, shooting from a knee or sitting down if you're blind or something. Yeah, there are all these little pieces that don't mean anything until the moment of truth, right? The lifetime animals out there, you're with Rusty, whatever. And it's like, I never practiced this.
Yeah.
And Cole mentioned, we've set up blinds. Remember, Cole mentioned from, Cole owns Dead Nuts targets, and he had mentioned that he had practiced this off-balance shot a number of times, and an elk presented, and he was off-balance, and he was like, I've done this 100 times, and it was perfect. So
it's also good to practice uphill and downhill shots.
Yeah, especially with the archery, right?
We talked about that, didn't we?
Yeah, you know, shooting MOA and stuff like that, there's a little formula for hills and stuff, but now you add that to a pin on archery. There's some steep angles that don't look right, but it's right on, and you need to get used to to that if you're going to do, you know, sheep or something where you're definitely in the hills. But yeah, that angle can throw the arrow way off, more so than rifles. It can work out in your scope, right? You make an adjustment, but shooting from a pin, it's like, wait a minute.
Yeah.
You got to think about this for a second.
It is, yeah.
So those are great things that somebody could do to be just really well prepared, right? And use your training time wisely. You know, everybody doesn't have unlimited amounts of time, so going and standing shooting the block when you've done this 1,000 times and you're good at it, add something else to it. Maybe
a good yeah, and even it. Just, like I said, being able to hold at full draw.
Yeah.
And then also follow-up shots, too. Like,
yep.
Practice, like, because, you know, when you're just practicing, a lot of times you're not doing everything very fast. Like, you're just taking your time. But I don't know how many times I've been with a guy where the first shot was a miss, and that buck stops at 45 to 50 yards.
And everybody's just watching.
And they don't have an arrow knocked yet.
Yeah.
Ideally, their arrow should already be knocked and ready to go.
Yep.
Right.
Like, so, and that's just like, I mean, that's no different than rifle hunting.
Sequence,
like,
right. Yeah.
You know, rifle hunting is the same way. A lot of guys miss that follow-up shot because they don't bolt right away.
Come out for the scope and looking now, right? Yeah.
Get so ready that follow-up shot, one. I mean, a lot of times can be the difference between, you know, getting that animal and not. So.
Yep. Yeah, and you could add that to a shooting sequence, right?
Yep.
You know, feet. And everything back, launch it, and then reload.
You should also
that would be a great way to do it.
Practice behind your yardage marks, because if you're hunting with a guide, like when I shot that one at 72 yards, you know, I was really at 73 or 74 because I was
they're never
behind
perfectly
you.
Aligned with my pin, is it?
No. Yeah. Well, and Mike makes a great statement, and this was back to the guiding thing, you know, am I behind or am I in front? And the answer is yes. There are times when I'm actually in front.
Yeah, there's both.
Because
we're
trying to hold still while they draw behind us, you know. So
yeah, you're providing cover sometimes.
They can provide cover. Yeah. But a lot of times I'm right behind them whispering in their ear too, you know. So it's kind of that whole, you know, being the guide, I got to be careful, you know, because if I'm standing too close as I'm whispering in his ear, when he releases that, I'll get an elbow right in the face.
You do it
and
once.
So, you don't forget the second time. And so, but, you know, and then the wind. I would like to tell everybody, go shoot with a crosswind. It doesn't have to be a 10-mile-an-hour wind, a crosswind.
Got to see what your arrows
just
will do.
Just try a breeze at first, because you'll notice just a breeze will push that arrow. Mm-hmm. At 40 yards, it'll push it 5-6 inches. Mm-hmm. You know, Mike and I snuck in on a buck years ago, and the buck fed right to us. So when we finally had the shot, Mike was at full draw. But the buck wouldn't turn, and he just kept coming and kept coming and kept coming, because we were in a shadow of some sagebrush, perfect, and he was going to walk right to us. Well, we weren't going to pull out our knives. We're still going to try to shoot him with his bow, but he's getting so close, and then finally the buck sees us, but he wouldn't turn, and so I think we were only 30 yards. We weren't very far. And that was the best curveball I ever saw in my life. When he let that arrow go, it was dead mass, dead center, right in the brisket. And we barely cut the outside of his leg when the wind blew it that much. And we were timing it because it was a gusty wind. And so Mike was, I could tell he was going, he would wait. We'd get a gust, and as soon as it would lay down, I knew he was going to shoot. As soon as it laid down, it went, puff, one more puff, and that arrow just went, and it just dove and hit the dirt, and we didn't get that buck.
Well, having done a bunch of, aerodynamic stuff with my arrows, right, and slow photography, I mean, it's funny how arrows don't come out straight and go to the target. They barrel roll, wiggle, they do all kinds of movement.
Around.
And so sometimes I've had, you know, super expensive arrows, but like, some of my ranges, that arrow has to go so far before it gets tuned back in.
Right.
So that's, I couldn't do a 10-yard shot. I need it to be at 25 for the arrow to settle down. So if you have ability with iPhones and stuff, you can do slow motion. You'd be amazed if you set up a little, like I have one in my garage, about 15 yards, and you watch what arrows do as you release them.
Yeah.
You have ranges you can't use too, right?
Flatter fletchings.
Yeah.
That's like a lot better because the ones that are around it more, they tend to hit your bow, and then it gets this.
Yeah, they have burbles coming off the back, and so it's got turbulence back there.
Yeah.
And, yeah, make that little bit longer, and it all goes away.
So. Yeah, it's interesting.
Yeah,
it's
super cool. Well,
so, Mark, we can tell stories all day long. Yeah. I mean, it's we've hunted so many years now together. It's been a lot of stories. Because we could do like 10 podcasts if we started telling all the stories. But one of the things I wanted to talk to you about today was, you know, we just recently went through this whole the trying to sell off of the public land in Utah. That started a whole thing. Every state was talking about it. You know, even the people in Washington were talking about selling ground in Washington State.
Yep.
And so you have hunted way more public land than I have. You grew up hunting more in public land. You know, I grew up hunting on the ranch. So it's a little bit different. You know, where was your take on this whole public land thing?
Generally, I was not in favor for it at all. I think it would set a bad precedence just to get rid of, you know, to surplus federal land. And I wasn't. The thing about public land is once it's gone, you're never going to get it back. And I'm a big proponent of actually gaining more public land access. Here in Kittitas County, I'm on the Public Lands Access Committee, which one of our goals is to increase access to public lands. We've already lost a lot of access to public lands just from easements that were historically there getting purchased, or there are private easements that were there for a long time but never dedicated easements to public land. Yeah. So like the Nanham State Forest, for example, is one that has, it actually doesn't have a dedicated state-owned easement into it.
Hmm.
So those are things that on that committee, we, you know, try to sustain. We have a, you know, one of our policy statements is that we want a zero net loss for Kittitas County public lands. So if some lands get sold, well, there should be some acquiring going on at the same time.
Sure, sure.
So my general opinion would be I was definitely against it. That being said, I do think there's probably some lands that don't really provide much value for the federal government or the state to have it. And so there is situations where, you know, you want to, like even here in this county, there's a few little pieces that Fish and Wildlife owns that they should not own. They're little, they're pieces that were bought originally for habitat enhancement, but now they're surrounded by private lands. They've been, you know, urban sprawls kind of surrounded them a little bit, and they really don't provide any value to the public at all. They're a pain to manage by the state. They are a weed patch that I have to deal with in my job all the time. those are good examples of, those should be surplus.
And I've seen in Idaho where they take something like that and they do a trade.
They'll, right.
There's a spot over here we want. Could we put this one into public and put that one into private? And so those are some cool ideas that Idaho does.
But the large swath of, you know, however many million acres it was going to be of federal land, definitely not a proponent of that. Like, that was a little bit scary to me because I think that's going to, like I said, set a precedent that you don't want.
That's kind of starts happening again.
Yeah, and especially state too. Like federal, you don't really have that, but for state, a lot of states are in state land, especially DNR land, are in trust for the state schools. Here in Kittitas County, we're even working on some that the Kittitas County would be the trust owner.
Mm-hmm.
So, and that's a, you know, a income that they may rely on to do a lot of different things. So,
absolutely. Well, public lands is important to hunting.
To the
hunting public.
Well, it's how somebody gets started. It's somebody somebody can keep a tradition going. So, I mean, there's, you know, whether it's hiking or fishing or hunting or recreating or some sort of ATV setup, I mean, it's usually the gateway, right?
Yeah.
Absolutely.
So if you don't have that, then that stuff dies to begin with. And,
And we'll never have enough private property that's going to be opening up to the amount of hunters that we need to do to be able to manage things.
Right.
And you know, like, you know, my ranch and the leases that I have were all mule deer. You know, if there's ever maybe an antelope tag, maybe that in the future. But basically my ranch is just mule deer and just the access for that kind of deal, maybe some upland birds and stuff. But I love elk hunting. And, you know, I've elk hunted with Mike over in Salmon and over in Idaho where he grew up hunting down over there. And if it wasn't for public lands, we'd have nothing to hunt on.
Yeah.
I would have no elk hunting that I could go do. I just don't have access to elk hunting ground. So, you know, I'm part of that same crew.
We're all part of it somewhere or another.
Somewhere or another. It touches us.
Yeah, Rusty and I have talked about, like, not much anymore, but we used to talk about, maybe we should try guiding elk hunts in Kittitas County, you know, because I know it so well here. But really, there's the best elk hunting in the county is on public land.
Yeah.
There's not,
you don't gain
there's
much.
Some, ranches that have good access for sure.
Yeah.
But in general, 90% of the elk herds are on public land.
Mm-hmm.
So, you don't really gain much at all there.
Yeah.
And the way that in Washington State that they do the elk hunts on private land are very specific to those ranches and to that area. You know, because there is a problem there.
Yeah, typically they're a problem herd, like the Silver Dollar, as an example. It's a problem herd that comes off of Hanford, so they dedicate tags, but yeah.
The Hanford ones with the five antlers.
Right.
Well, trust me, there's a few antlered bulls down on Hanford that
have
everybody...
12, not five, but 12.
Yeah. That everybody would like to see on the Silver Dollar Ranch.
Yeah, so definitely I would say I'm against it for the most part, but I don't think it should be like you shouldn't surplus anything because there's going to be lands that you got to look at. So
Open
the other one that's going to be really interesting too, and it's going to impact both public land and private land owners, is the corner crossing.
The checkerboarding.
And that's
super interesting.
I'm really intrigued to see how that gets tested from other states,
Well, so far I've watched the Wyoming guy suing over airspace. So with me being an aviation and airspace guy, it's like, so I own up to 400 feet? Like, wait a minute.
Right.
Because if I talk to the FAA, they don't see it that
way.
So,
exactly. Yeah.
So the government's giving you airspace that the FAA is like, it's not yours.
But I think you'll see that you'll have people in Washington that, at least either have the money or just have the, they think they're in the right and are willing to go to battle for it, that it's going to get tested this year.
Yeah, that's where this guy
during
is,
hunting
season.
So it'll get tested, and I'm curious to see where it goes.
It's super fascinating,
I'll tell you what, I know a couple pieces that I would love to be able to access, but I can't, and it's that exact situation.
Yeah.
It's landlocked by corners, so.
It's true.
Yeah.
Well, Rusty, we're up to time for your calendar. What's going on for August, early August, ready to go into some fall stuff here?
Right now, my scouting has picked up the last 2 weeks. I'm feeling way
and
more
happy. And you're seeing deer, right?
Yeah, than I was 2 weeks ago. So I'm happy about that. I'm happy to be back out scouting and seeing animals and Mark and I were sharing some videos that I had taken here recently, just before we started on the podcast. So that's kind of where a lot of my stuff is going, the scouting stuff right there. The birds are the birds for sure. But now you and me talked about this last podcast is the bears. The bears opened last Friday.
Mm-hmm.
And so I've actually went out and spent a little bit of time in a place or two where we've seen bears in the past. I'm just trying to get some kind of a baseline down to, is that track fresh or is that track a month old? Because I'm not going to spend a lot of time if it's a month old. But if it's fresh, we'll hang around here a little bit.
So somebody wants a bear hunt, give you a
buzz.
If
somebody wants to, give me
a
call. See what I'm seeing. We'll talk about how we can make that work. The website has been updated. And
how can everybody find you then?
Most of the prices on the HiddenRanchOutfitters.com website are the ones that we've updated the most.
Okay.
We've added a predator page, so you'll be able to see that on there. And it's talking about, I've been talking to Kelly, the coyote guide. And so he has given us some videos of his night
thermal stuff, right?
His thermal stuff that he's been doing. So we've kind of got that all up. And in fact, he called me today and asked me if we had done the podcast yet, because he was excited he's pretty wired for this season. Us putting it on the website and kind of, you know, it was just word of mouth and by the guys that knew us, but now we're putting it out there so he can see that. The other thing is, you know, we had Dan and Brad on. We've been talking to them about actually doing a segment because of the how popular the dog training and the dogs stuff that they talked about was. Okay. So we might be adding them in something to the podcast. You and I have been talking about that too, of how that would work. So we're probably going to be doing some of that here in the next on my calendar here in the next little bit too, trying to figure that out. And then Mike's group, Mike's here doing harvest with my brothers and driving truck and everything. But his group is going to be coming in for the first hunt in first September.
Great. How many in your group?
Well, there's three of us.
Okay.
All from Carmel, and then Tim.
And then Tim's from Minnesota.
Minnesota, but we hunted with them. I hunted with them before, and then Rusty got him into our group because we only had three,
so
it made sense. But Tim's a real fun guy to hunt with.
Great.
Yeah, yeah, it's been a really good camp the last couple of years. Yeah.
the first camp in archery is always...
I'm usually pretty busy during this time of year, like with my job, it's still going. So archery sometimes is pretty tough for me to get away, but for this camp, I'm always like, yeah, I'm taking the time off.
So that's a good point. So we did talk about birds and dogs and kind of the ratio guides to hunters. Yeah. What are we going to do for archery? Is it one-on-one?
Nope, archery is two-on-one.
Okay, two-on-one.
Mark
and
I will be the two guides, and we're taking the four of them out.
Perfect.
Mike is an easy one because he's been coming for so long, and we've been so successful with shooting some bucks and stuff. Mike's a great help, especially when we're working with Jeff and Tim that haven't been successful on a harvest of a archery buck yet. And so we're really working on that. We worked on it pretty hard last year. You know, and then
we'll seal the deal this year. Yeah. I'm calling it right now.
You're calling it right now.
Mark's calling it. I really want somebody besides me to shoot a deer.
Yeah,
that'd be so awesome.
So 2-1. That sounds like a pretty decent setup, actually.
Well, and you know, we've talked about this on the podcast before, but you know, Mark knows the deal. So does Mike, because they've both been there. You know, it starts out at the first day, you know, before the hunt, we're out scouting, and it's 2-1. You know, we've got 200 for each one of us, and we're planning to go the next day, and everybody's talking about, well, who's going to go first? And
that's what,
know,
I was wondering, who's going day. First?
And so we have many different ways of them choosing that. And so we're talking about all that. But like on the last 2 days of the hunt, it's like 2-1 the other way. We have one hunter left, and there's two guides, and then we have all these assistants.
A bunch of assistants.
There you go. And there's a lot of noise in the background.
Rusty's always throwing me in the back seat.
And so, you know, we had one hunter years and years and years ago when we first started, you know, it ended up that way. He was the only one left that hadn't harvested,
like fun,
right?
Yeah.
And all of a sudden he goes, I am not hunting on Channel 4 News. He goes, you guys go somewhere else. I'm not going to hunt in front of y'all. He did not want us watching. And
a TV show one time came out to film, and there were so many people with all the camera stuff.
Oh,
it was like,
my word.
We are making too much noise. We've got to stop this.
So that's funny. Mark was the very first time we ever did a TV deal.
Okay.
You were the guide on that.
Yeah. Grateful Nation.
Yeah, yeah. Which was ended up fantastic.
It was great.
It was fantastic, and we were so nervous going in, and Mark's like, well, what if we don't find a buck? You know, and I'm thinking, you're not telling me anything. I'm not thinking because I'm dying inside going, oh, my word, we got a TV crew coming, and when we don't find a buck, and I'm thinking, well, when was the last time
Mike out in a deer costume or something?
When was the last time we didn't find one?
So. In my head, I'm picturing, okay, one other guy with a GoPro. That's what I'm picturing.
Yeah. Nope. Not quite what they show up
quite.
With, is it?
No. One other guy with a GoPro.
Yeah, like a busload of people following you, hiding behind the same tree.
We had a host. Camera guys hauling all kinds of equipment. Yeah, it was a marching band. I came back after the first day. I told Rusty, he's like, we're never going to get anything.
Never sign me up for this again.
Yeah. But we did. We got a buck.
Yeah. Mark's all wired up, got all the stuff on. You know, it's not like today where we have the cordless, you know, mics. No, you had to have the wire up your shirt and your back pocket and everything else. Mark comes in driving in. I can see the look on his face before he says, hey, this did not go well this morning. And he's he motions me and we go around behind the bar and he's turning off all these little switches. He's going, this is a circus. We ain't going to kill nothing.
The beginning and end of Mark's TV career.
That was how little we knew about hunting with a Kiwi camera. Oh, my gosh.
Well, we got her done.
Yeah, we did.
And we did it again. And again. So it's possible.
It's possible, yeah.
Yeah, you even had one that was not quite going as planned, and you had cameramen chasing you, following you, running, and the whole work. So, you've had that one. And of course, when it came out on TV, it was,
two shots.
Super easy. Yeah.
Killed it easy.
5 minutes.
Mark's going, reality TV. Yeah.
Editing is an amazing thing.
Yeah, exactly.
So on the calendar, we're looking good. We're excited.
All right. So how can people that are interested find your stuff, your adventures, your hunting?
Yep. So, this is HRO Adventures on the podcast, and that's what because we do some tours with the Ice Age Flood guys. We do some tours just to get taking people out.
Bird watching.
In fact, I had with the bird watchers, mm-hmm. exactly, but I had a video cameraman a camera person talked to me the other day wanting to go out and take pictures and videos, and I'm going, well, I'm doing that already, but this is another moneymaker, so mm-hmm. I'm going, okay, this is another tour and we can do this. And so, of course, I'm trying to find all the neighbors and go look at their bucks, because I don't want to take pictures of mine.
Always scouting.
Exactly. Yeah. Mm-hmm. Exactly. We don't need to go look at my bucks. Let's go look at somebody else's.
What's over here?
And so, but the other outfitters around, some of the other people that I know that guide and do stuff and talk to, it's been good to visit with them and to see what they're doing too. And so they're all out doing the same thing that we are. They're putting the trail cameras out and looking at them, and now we're starting to share trail camera pictures with everybody. And you see everybody's got a camera, and it's like I was showing Mark some videos I took out of my binoculars the other day, so that's cool. We need to talk about that sometime too, about the digiscoping that
we do.
Has become part of my life. Who would have thought I would ever be doing what I'm doing? I mean, and it used to be I'd put everything up and then I'd take 27 pictures and then pick out the one I mm-hmm. really like.
It'd take you forever to take one.
Yeah, screw that. I just turn on the video now.
Yeah,
I'll just edit it down.
Exactly.
And somebody's going, well, does it have an eye guard? About that time it turns and looks. Oh, yep, it has an eye guard. Except for I got to buy Mark a new phone because I can't send him any videos. He can't see any.
Sounds like you need a new phone.
So, that ain't going to happen. I already tried all that.
It's an iPhone thing. That's the problem.
Yeah, you need
one. There's always one guy.
I'm that guy.
Give him a flip phone.
Flip phone, yeah. Exactly.
But I think he's just being tough because of Jack and Cash. I think that's it.
Oh, man, but he could be like Captain Kirk.
Because as soon as the boys are out of the house and off, Mark's going to have the fanciest phone, the best Spotty's cup. Yeah. He's just afraid that the boys are going to take it all right now.
Right.
Like, I keep joking with my wife that I'm throwing this thing in the garbage can the moment I retire. It's like, I am so sick of these electronics and they don't work like they advertise. We've kind of played with everything and now I'm ready to go back to just pencil and paper and I don't need all this stuff.
Well, Mark's been around long enough to watch. He hangs out with my dad once in a while.
Okay.
And Dad's going, Rusty's got my old Spotty's cup. Rusty's got my old binoculars because I've stole everything from my dad.
Well, they're heirlooms.
Mark's going, I'm not giving the boys anything. You want to steal this old junk? Go ahead.
It's funny that, like you said, though, like I never, I grew up hunting. We didn't have any of that stuff, But now I use Onyx hunting all the time. I'm right here. That buck's right here. And, and then you get over there and like, I'm slightly off. Like, I use those tools on the topography map all the time. And I think it's made a huge difference as far as stuff
There's
like that.
There's no excuse for not knowing where you are now.
Yeah, right.
So we were talking about
property boundaries.
Stuff,
it's huge.
Hey, do you know where you are? I know exactly where I'm at.
Yeah, that's why.
Zero.
That's why when a trespasser says, "Oh, I didn't know," I'm like,
"Come on, man!"
especially
that
when
just
they
pisses me off.
Especially when they're a hunting person.
Yeah,
because
remember
they know,
those people we saw? They were camping out near on the ranch, and we're like, and,
"Oh yeah!"
And the lady says, "Oh yeah, I have Onyx." And Rusty's like, "Yeah, well, look at where you are.
You don't know how to read it.
No excuse now."
That
right?
was we. They had set up camp and everything.
Yeah.
And we got over there and she goes, "Yeah, we're on state ground." "Oh, really?" And I says, "Well, not quite. You're kind of close. Kind of. Not really, but you're kind of close." And then as she pulls out, she goes, "I have Onyx."
Yeah, that was a big mistake.
She shows me and she's like, "Oh, we're a quarter mile past the state ground." "Yes, you are. So go away."
Yeah. Back up your crap.
It's like, oh, my word.
Oh, man.
So, yeah, you have it, so use it.
Yeah. Yeah, there's some great tools like that for sure.
So that's pretty good.
All right. So. Well, it's time to wrap it up from Ellensburg, Washington, but tell people your websites.
Yep. Go to HiddenRanchOutfitters.com. That's the best way to find us. That's the OG. What's the one to go look at the most? It's all been updated. We've, even though... You know, I'm sure you'll find a misspelling. If you do, text me.
We aren't here for the spelling.
And we'll fix that back. So, you know, but yeah. And, you know, I had somebody tell me the other day, you know, boy, you could make this read a little nicer. Do you not know how I talk?
Yeah.
And so it is my website, so it probably should sound like me, kind of.
Sign up for something and come out and tell me.
Exactly. Exactly. So
all right.
There is some hillbilly on there, that's for sure.
That's okay. That's for sure. We're paying you for your hunting expertise, not your grammar. Right?
Exactly.
All right. Well, Mark and Mike, thanks for taking out the time. Thanks for telling your stories. Appreciate it. It's neat perspectives from a guide for Rusty and a client from Rusty. So that's pretty cool.
You bet.
And
thank you.
Appreciate the support from the center out here in Kittitas to, you know, do our podcast. So.
Yeah. It was nice to be able to meet in the middle.
Yeah,
you didn't have
right.
to drive all the way over to the ranch. I didn't have to go all the way to Snoqualmie.
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah, I mean, you had company today on your drive.
Company with me.
Yeah, you didn't have to drive by yourself. Yeah. So
I'm about ready to head over the hill myself.
That's what I heard.
Head to the Mariners game.
You staying overnight or what do you do?
Nah, I'll just make it over and back. So it'll be a late night, but that's all right.
Is tonight a special night at the game?
It's Washington State Wrestling Association night. That's why I'm going.
There you go.
Okay. Yep. All right. Because this week is, you know, they're retiring the 51 tonight.
Yeah.
Or this week.
Yeah. Right.
I didn't know if there was something special with that.
No, so Washington State Wrestling Association is doing a host night. So
nice.
Yeah, so there's a section that's dedicated for Washington State Wrestling that we're in and shirts. So it's just an advertisement for that.
Oh, very cool.
Very cool.
So,
support the kids, right?
Yep, exactly.
So does the oldest get to go?
We're all going, actually.
Oh, the whole family.
Yeah, even Andy, my wife, decided she was...
Very nice.
A Mariners fan.
Yeah. So, nice. But yeah, no... Jack's a big Mariners. My oldest son is a big sports fan. He's any sports, but a big Mariners fan. It'll be a first Mariners game for Cash, so he's kind of excited about that.
Cash never been before, huh?
No. Yeah. So, yeah, it'll be good.
Yeah, when Jack worked for me that summer, you know, I bought those tickets for him because I just had to. Because every day we'd go out to service combines.
Yeah.
The game was playing.
Oh, my
the
gosh,
background
that's
blaring.
Fun.
I can hear it from across the field.
Oh, I love
Jack
it.
Jack over there listening to the Mariners as he's...
But we're a family of wrestlers and a family of sports fans, so figured Perfect. It's a good fit. So
good, clean nice. Fun.
Yep.
Nice. Have a safe drive over.
Thank you.
And I'm sure I'll see you guys come hunting season. So.
Sounds good. Looking forward to it.
Sounds All right. Good. Thanks, everybody. Stay safe.
Thanks, Dave.
Thank you.